a lot of the judgment just comes from misunderstanding and often a little bit of jealousy. You know, I think that a lot of parents who are very sleep deprived and stuck in this rut that they feel like they can't move on from because they've subscribed to a extreme parenting philosophy. You know, they're unhappy. They're sleep deprived. They're unhappy. They're trying to subscribe to these extreme philosophies, which aren't gelling with them as a person. And so they then judge people who are taking their situation and improving it with sleep training.
Hey mamas, do you ever get tired of trying to be the perfect mom or wonder how you're going to make it through the day? I know I do. I'm Kendall Yanez, a mom of two, a recovering perfectionist, and a people pleaser. Sorta. I'm still a work in progress. Being a mom is the most rewarding but hardest job you can have. Behind every kid is a mom who believes she is failing. If you're looking for a fun and safe, judgment-free community of mom to talk about all the good and bad that comes with this crazy, most beautiful thing called motherhood, you're in the right place. I have built a community membership that will be perfect just for you. I am no expert, but on this podcast, we will get real and honest. I interview moms in different walks of life. They all have different stories to share and advice to give. Whether you need advice, you're looking for clarity, or you just need a good laugh with some girlfriends, that's what we're here for. So let's walk through motherhood together. Welcome to my podcast. Mama, you're doing great. Before we start laughing, crying, and feeling all the emotions as mamas like to feel, please take a second to hit that subscribe button to this podcast so you can come back and hear more mom friends share their stories. Also, if you haven't already, make sure you follow me on Instagram at Kendall Yanez. Don't forget to check out mamayouredoinggreat.com to shop and to see how you can get inside a community membership and connect with other mamas just like you. Let's get started. Today, I have the privilege of having Emma on the podcast. She is a baby sleep consultant in New Zealand. Babies and their sleeping habits are her passion. After nearly 10 years of helping mothers get their babies off to sleep, she has lost the count of how many people she has helped. She's a bachelor's of science and a diploma in education from the University of Auckland. She is a certified infant and child sleep consultant, happiest babies on the block educator, and a mom of three. With three children of her own, she has lots of experience and fully understands the conflict many parents feel, torn between the exhaustion and the love they feel for their baby. She found Baby Sleep Consultant in response to what she felt was huge need for quality help for children who don't sleep well. They train consultants internationally and have carried over 100,000 sleep consultants. Today, she shares so much knowledge about newborn sleeping patterns and how their brains are wired plays a factor. We talk about a huge topic every mama stresses about at some point and how we make it way more stressful than it needs to be by reading and downloading apps that tell us exactly how it should be. It's sleep regressions. We also dive into the judgment of sleep training and self-soothing. She is even an expert in toddlers and how to prevent them yo-yoing back and forth from the bed to the hallway. What I would do to hear this episode years ago as a new mom. This is an amazing episode. I can't wait for you to hear it. If you are struggling with any type of sleeping or napping situations, this is the episode for you. So with Emma in New Zealand and me in Texas and us recording through Zoom, there was a little bit of a delay and internet connection buffering. So some of her explaining might be a little buffered. Overall, it is an amazing episode. You will be able to understand exactly what she's saying. And so give us a little grace. Let's dive in and hear what Emma has to say. Hey, Emma, how are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited that you are here. I just want to just dive right in and we want to get to know you. And so let my mamas know who you are and what you do and how you got into the sleep consultant.
So I am a infant and child sleep consultant. And I also have a bachelor's in science and a postgraduate in education. So I was teaching science before I became a sleep consultant. And I have three children of my own who are 11, 13, and 16. So I've been doing this for a long time, over 10 years now. And the way I got into this field was probably like a lot of people. I had a baby and she didn't sleep that well, my first. Mainly, I had no idea how to put a baby to sleep or how much sleep they needed. You know, I just focused, like a lot of mums do, on the pregnancy and the birth and knew everything I needed to know about that, but I had no idea about the time after she was born. So, you know, I struggled with trying to get her to sleep. My mum was a midwife at the time and she could help me a little bit. But then I was reading books that were saying, you know, after an hour of having a newborn awake, put her down for a nap. And I was like, okay, that's great in theory, but how do I get my baby to take a nap? you know, I don't know how to get her to sleep. And the only way that I could get her to sleep was to feed her to sleep, which again is the case for a lot of newborn mums. And then I just developed really bad mastitis and had a massive breast abscess that required surgery. And there's no way I could feed her to sleep after having that surgery. So then I really had to figure out a way to get this baby to sleep. And that kind of kick-started my interest in figuring out how to get babies to sleep. And then because I came from a different background, I was a scientist, that was kind of the avenue that I started researching sleep from this science perspective, as opposed to, at the time, there were a few baby whisperers out there, but it just seemed like they had some natural talent, you know, they could naturally work well with babies. But I wanted to understand, surely there's some science behind infant sleep. So that was the way that I started researching it. And then I just didn't really stop. I researched and researched for a lot of years, had more children, and then got qualified in this area. And now we qualify and certify other sleep consultants, as well as, yeah, helping thousands of mums every year with their own sleep.
That's awesome. I wish I would have known you 6 years ago whenever I had my baby. I found you on Instagram and I just started watching all your reels and I just loved everything that you were just teaching. And it's almost like it's just more simple than, you know, moms. We stress about it. Like you said, it's like we're new moms and we have no idea how to get our babies to go to sleep. Yeah, like I just would love for you to kind of share some tips and tricks on like newborns to like throughout the first year, and then sleep regressions, like talking about sleep regressions, like is that, you know, a real thing or is that kind of like fibs? So I would love to just kind of talk about that a little bit.
Cool. So sleep tips for the first year, that's a very long time frame. So I guess if we think about it in a couple of blocks, so the newborn months, you really want to work on establishing the difference between night and day for your baby. I think there's a little bit of confusion there where people believe that their child is genuinely confused about what is night and what is day, and they think night is day and day is night. But actually, they just have not developed yet their circadian rhythm, which is their internal biological clock. So instead of running on a day-night rhythm, they're just running on a 24-hour rhythm. You know, it's just the same 24 hours. So you really need to work with their developing circadian rhythm, which starts to develop from the week they're born. Again, there's another misconception that people love to tell you, that newborns don't have any circadian rhythm. And then suddenly at 3 or 4 months, it just switches on. And that's not true. It's gradually developing and getting stronger and stronger each week, in that they are starting to produce small amounts of sleep hormones and small amounts of cortisol, which wakes us up. And they're starting to show differences in their temperature, their body temperature throughout the day. Our body temperature fluctuates with our circadian rhythm, and these things all help regulate our sleep-wake cycles. So you want to work with the fact that your newborn is developing their circadian rhythm and support this development by gradually increasing their awake time during the day and gradually decreasing their awake time at night. So increasing their awake time gradually during the day from sort of an hour in that first week to almost, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours potentially by 3 or 4 months. So that's a big and dramatic change to occur over 3 to 4 months. So you do want to increase that each week. Otherwise, you will find that you get stuck in this pattern of 1 to 2 hourly wake-ups at night. And the way you can support their night sleep is a really simple tip. And I actually just posted about this on Instagram yesterday. And that is at night when they wake up, the best thing that you can do. And again, it kind of goes against what a lot of breastfeeding experts really push. You know, they push the fact that the minute your newborn stirs or makes any kind of sound, you should breastfeed them. And this will help develop this great supply, and that's natural and normal. But the research and the science says if they wake up at night and the first thing you do is feed them, the minute they rouse, they will just continue to wake very frequently at night. And yes, you will develop a great supply, but you'll probably be so exhausted that over time you might actually just want to quit breastfeeding. So what you can do instead, which is again is supported by science, is when they wake up at night, just spend a couple of minutes trying to settle them in some other way. So that could be just pick them up and cuddle them, or give them a pacifier, or pat them, or rock them, just for a couple of minutes. And if they quickly settle back to sleep, that's great. If they don't, then at that point, you'd probably just feed them. And what the evidence shows us is that this kind of has an accumulative effect where over the coming weeks, they start to really naturally consolidate their night sleep. And this is without any kind of sleep training. You're just really naturally encouraging them to sleep more at night and less in the day as they get older and more capable of doing so. We're not depriving them of any feeds or anything like that. It's just really encouraging them to naturally consolidate their night sleep. And I'm only talking, they might by the end of 3 months, you know, be giving you a 4 to 6 hour chunk of sleep at night, and then another 4 to 6 hours. We're not talking about them sleeping through the night or anything like that. So that's a really good tip for the newborn months. And then I guess once they leave the newborn months, I'd probably say the two things that are going to ensure your success with having a good sleeper would be gradually assisting them less to sleep and allowing them to begin to self-settle. And if that's not possible, then you can go down the route of sleep training and actually teach them to self-settle with some behavior modification strategies and focusing on putting them down in their cots awake and them starting to self-settle. And that doesn't mean cry it out. There's a whole range of options to teach your baby to self-settle, but the ultimate goal is they go into the cot awake and they put themselves to sleep. And then your second tip would be knowing how much sleep they need for each age range and trying to stick to that as close as possible. And I think if you can do those two things in the first year, knowing that, again, how much sleep they need during the day is going to continue to decrease from that newborn period through to 12 months. And if you stay on top of that and keep reducing their day sleep, they will again naturally sleep more and more at night, because you will be increasing that sleep pressure at night by decreasing how much sleep they're having in the day at an age appropriate rate. You know, we don't want to just deprive them of all sleep to try to have them sleep through the night. So those are my two, I guess, biggest tips for that.
Okay, yeah. So what is a good age on like self-soothing? Like, is there like an age that you, or do you just like kind of go with like what the parents want?
So yeah, there is, and I have a blog on my website about this if you want to read more on this topic, because there is a sweet spot. So we can teach self-settling from 4 to 6 months. So that's kind of when we know babies neurologically can learn to self-settle. And I think the sweetest spot is 5 to 6 months. So for a few reasons, around 5 to 6 months, they're probably not confidently doing too much moving. So once they begin to like crawl and pull up to standing sort of in that 9 to 10, 12 month period, it gets a lot harder to teach them to self-settle because they're so active and they can move around the cot so much. And I also think from 9 months, they become very stubborn, and sleep training can sort of take twice as long as it would have when they were younger. And that can make parents feel disheartened and quit. Yeah. But around that 5 month mark, we know they're not hungry. You know, we kind of got to know them as a baby. We know their hunger cues. They're not a little vulnerable newborn anymore. They're probably not moving that much. And then you start to get into the period where you're starting solid. So you get really confident that they're not hungry. They are unswaddled and they have their hands free to soothe. They can stay awake for a decent chunk of time in the day, you know, a good more than 2 hours, which helps us with a decent amount of sleep pressure. And they are just dreams to teach to self-settle at that age.
Right. When I got pregnant with my second, I prayed it was a girl. I dreamed of having a little girl to match, play dress up with, and to watch her at first of many dance recitals. When God gave me my wish and I found out we were having a little girl, I already knew exactly where I was going to shop for her clothes. Girl moms, listen up. If you are looking for trendy, classy outfits and a staple item for your princess, I've got you covered. It's Bailey's Blossoms. From infant to tweens to mommy and me and the accessories in between. When you shop at Bailey's Blossoms, you get high-quality items, unbeatable prices, and lightning-fast shipping. They have everything you need for your little girl. From leotards, bail pants, skirts and shorts, dresses, and even stylish jackets. If you know me, I love to match my little girl, and I'm going to match her as long as she'll let me. Bailey's Blossoms has the cutest Mommy Me collection. Boy moms, don't stop listening. You don't have to have a little girl to shop here. The Mommy collection is to die for, whether you're matching someone or not. There is something for everyone. The other reason why I love Bailey's Blossoms is everything is made in Texas. So head on over to baileysblossoms.com and treat yourself. Use a code KINDLE for 20% off. When you fall in love with Bailey's Blossoms like I have, show it off on Instagram and tag us so we can see how stylish your little one looks. So what's the definition technically of self-soothing versus like the sleep training?
So I think I prefer to use the word self-settling because there is a little bit of controversy out there where there is a psychological term of self-soothing, which is applied to adults. And that is getting yourself from like this state of complete hysteria or trauma and crying to calming yourself down. And people who are opposed to sleep training say, look, babies can't do that. Only adults can. But what babies can do is self-settle to sleep. That is take themselves from awake to asleep without any intervention from us once they're sort of in that 4 to 6 month plus age group. And some babies can go from being very upset to asleep on their own. Others, if they get very upset, need us to help them to calm down a little bit, and then they can get themselves off to sleep on their own. But it's the art of going from awake to asleep that is self-settling. And a lot of babies in that process will do some crying. The difference then between that and sleep training is just the mechanism that parents use to teach their baby to move from being assisted to sleep by the parents to learning to go to sleep on their own without the assistance of their parents. So there's a whole lot of different ways you can sleep train a baby. They don't have to be cried out. There's lots of hands-on strategies. But at the end of the day, the end goal is always about the baby learning to independently get themselves from awake to asleep.
Okay. So could we talk about some tips for the self-soothing?
Yeah, I think the biggest one for that is understanding your child's temperament and your parenting style. And if these two things don't match, then I think the adult is the one that needs to compromise. So if when you look at your child's temperament, they are very sensitive and, you know, they struggle to go from upset to calm and they don't cope well with change, then that kind of leans towards you're probably going to have to do a very gentle strategy. But you might have a conflict there where your parenting style is very hands-off and you don't want to do the gentle sleep training. But really, if one of you has to compromise, it probably has to be the parent, because a child can't really change their temperament. You know, that's something they're born with. So matching the child's temperament to the strategy you're going to use is what will give you the fastest success rate, because it will work really well for their temperament. And again, for the other side of that, if you're a very gentle parent, but your baby is very easily overstimulated by you in the room, and, you know, they are very easily distracted by you, and they're very outgoing, they're probably not going to cope with a very gentle hands-on strategy, probably going to have to leave the room. And again, realize that that very gentle approach doesn't work with their temperament. So the biggest tip would be work out what their temperament is and apply the strategy that matches their temperament.
Okay. Yeah, I know that can be hard for some parents because you're just tired and you're just like, I'm done. I'm ready for this baby to go to sleep. But that does make sense. That totally makes sense. So I had some questions submitted to me to ask you, and just like a few, and I think this applies to the first few months of life, is like, how many times do you change a baby in the night? Does that disrupt their sleep? And like, do you believe in the don't wake a sleeping baby?
Okay, so nappy changing at night, I would just do it when you do a feed. So if you're breastfeeding, feed one side, change the nappy, re-swaddle, and then finish feeding on the other side and put them back to bed. So if you feed twice a night, you change the nappy twice a night. It does wake them up a little bit, but I think that's a good thing because it then makes them take a proper feed on the other side, so they're not taking little snack feeds throughout the night. So it's a good thing, changing the nappy and waking them up. And the second feed helps them get sleepy again, you know, after the nappy change. That's why I wouldn't do it after the complete feed. Do it in the middle. And if you're bottle feeding, just do half a bottle, change the nappy, and then finish the bottle after the nappy change. And do I believe in never wake a sleeping baby? 100% no. wake a sleeping baby. So if you think back to what we talked about with the circadian rhythm, if your baby is trying to sleep for 2 or 3 hours in the day, wake them up. We're trying to increase their awake time in the day to work with their circadian rhythm and build that sleep pressure at night. So you have to wake them up a lot of the time to achieve that. Obviously, we want them to get enough sleep during the day, but not too much. So that involves waking them up.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. I just had to ask that question. It's so funny. Just generations of like, don't wake that sleeping baby. So what is the rhythm that you're talking about? Is that with the brain or?
Yeah. So the circadian rhythm is your internal biological clock. So this is governed by a part of your brain that releases different neurohormones each day that control the fact that your body knows whether it's day or night. And we know that if we put humans in a completely dark or a completely light space with no external cues, they still run on a roughly 24-hour rhythm. I think it ends up being more like 25 or 26 hours, but we still know day from night. And the things which help us to keep in rhythm with our external environment are things like light, food, and social interaction. And these help to what we call entrain our body and our brain to know that this is the start of the day and the end of the day, to kind of stay on rhythm with the external environment. But yeah, to answer your question, it is an internal clock inside your brain that basically knows what time of day it is, which is why a lot of people, when they're not sleep deprived, can say to themselves, oh, I've got to get up early tomorrow to go to the airport. I'll set an alarm for 5 a.m. when I usually get up at 7 a.m. And a lot of people will wake at 5 to 5 because their brain knows what time it is and they know they have to wake up and it wakes them up. Obviously, we struggle with that if we're sleep deprived parents, but you probably remember that kind of thing from your younger day. And similarly, I think something else parents can sort of recognize is that if they, for example, on the weekend, skip breakfast and go out for brunch, they shouldn't really be hungry at lunchtime. But because they're used to eating most days at lunchtime, their body will still probably give them hunger signals at lunchtime saying, hey, it's lunchtime, because they're very much used to eating at the same time every day. And their body knows that's the time that they eat lunch, despite that they only ate brunch 2 hours earlier and they don't actually need any more food, but their brain knows what time of day it is.
Very impressive. Thank you for explaining that, because I was like, I don't know if everybody will know exactly what that means.
Yeah.
So let's dive into sleep regression. Okay, like I know me, when I had my son 6 years ago, I mean, that was, I would read and I would read and I was just getting this like obsession over the windows and the everything that the book said, right? And so again, my six-year-old, he was not a good sleeper the first year of life. And so, yeah, is that real timeline? Like what are the sleep regression times and what are the tips and tricks for them?
So I think sleep regressions have taken a bit of a hold of parents over the last 10 years and are now responsible for a lot of anxiety for parents, which I don't necessarily think is a good thing. So yeah, I think things like the Wonder Weeks book have a lot to answer for in terms of creating a bit of anxiety around these regressions and leaps and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
The reality is the 4 month sleep regression can occur anytime from 8 weeks to 4 months. And it's not a regression. It's a permanent progression or shift in the structure of your baby's sleep. And like I said, it's permanent. So after your baby goes through this change, it just means that they're going to wake more fully after each sleep cycle. and they sort of check their environment to make sure it's the same place they went to sleep and go back to sleep if they can self-settle, or they call out for your help to get back to sleep if they can't, or they will often cry if they have changed sleep locations because they're confused about where they are. They fell asleep in your arms, now they're in the cot. And that's a permanent shift. So a lot of people will be emailing and asking, saying, when will this 4 month sleep regression stop? And it's not going to stop. What will help your baby to get out of it is focusing on putting your baby down to sleep in their cot. If they're very little, still helping them to go to sleep. And if they're old enough, work on teaching them to fall asleep independently in their cot. And that way, when they do that full wake up after a sleep cycle, they check their environment and they can just go back to sleep if they're not hungry. And you will then see those longer patches of sleep at night. So that's the 4 month sleep regression. Now, after that, any other regression really is just associated with a developmental stage that your baby's going through that often interferes with sleep. So things like learning to crawl, sit, stand, walk, and talk, all of these things can interfere with sleep. And so we notice when our baby is about to or is just learning one of those skills, often their sleep will go bad for a couple of weeks, which is the term regressing. Then it will come out the other side. As long as through that regression, we as parents don't introduce any new sleep associations. So if you, for example, have noticed your baby's learning to crawl and their sleep starts to get bad, they're crawling around their cot, they're crying, they're not going to sleep like they used to, we might see some nap strikes or some more wake ups at night that we didn't previously have. And if you say to yourself, okay, like last week, I know my baby could self-settle and they could sleep through the night and they were taking two really good naps in the day, so they can keep doing that. I'm just going to focus on letting them self-settle. And I know this is just because they're crawling. It's just a stage. It will pass. It's okay if they don't nap as much at the moment. They're crawling and grizzling. It'll settle down. Then in all likelihood, in a week, that stage will have passed and they'll be back to sleeping well. But if you instead introduce a new sleep association, so they're not sleeping, they're crawling around the cot, so you decide to rock them to sleep or take them for a drive to get them to sleep. And then in the night, they wake up and they don't previously wake up, you decide to feed them. So 2 hours later, they wake up again, crawling around the cot, and you feed them again. Now you've introduced new sleep associations, and in all likelihood, you're going to have to re-sleep train in a couple of weeks when you realize that you've gone from just a short regression to some new full-blown habits. And that's kind of what makes people end up in situations where they say, you know, oh gosh, we hit the 8 month sleep regression and then we're still there 12 months later or something like that. It's because they've introduced new sleep associations that their baby has, you know, gotten used to. And the only way out of that is to sleep train. So the tip really is to not introduce new sleep associations and know that it's just that your baby's learning a new skill and they will eventually go to sleep.
That is so interesting. Like, I'm over here just like shaking my head and just like shake, like hitting my forehead, because I'm like, that was us. Like every time he would change, like, oh, it's a sleep regression. So now, okay, so last week we did this, so let's try this. And then now yeah. It makes total sense. Like he was so confused because we were constantly like changing what we were doing. It just makes, that makes total sense. And I think what you said best is it's a phase. It will pass. And that is something that I learned and I'm still learning as, you know, my first to second and just having kids. It's like each phase will pass. And it's so huge to remember that. And that's something I wish I would have just instilled in myself as a new mom. And I try to instill in like new moms now. I'm like, this phase that you think will never end, it's like this dark hole that you'll never get out of. Like you will get out of it, I promise. But I love that. That makes total sense. So like, do you suggest like new moms reading, downloading those apps, like kind of like you said, that obsession? Like me, I say burn all the books. What do you think?
I think don't download the Wonder Weeks app. Yeah, that one is very anxiety provoking. You know, people look at it and they're like, oh, I think this week I might work on trying to teach my little one to have a better bedtime routine and start to self-settle because I'm really exhausted at night and can't really keep doing this. There's 6 months, you know, and then they open that app and they go, oh, they're just about to hit leap 421. So I'll put it off, you know, and it's rubbish. No one has been able to reproduce the Wonder Weeks leaps and whatever else they call it. There is no science behind it. And I think it's so anxiety provoking. That's a hard no for me, the Wonder Weeks app. But the books, I guess it depends if you can be kind of self-aware. Are the books creating anxiety for you? Or do you find it interesting and empowering? Because I don't know if you can see my bookshelf on the Zoom, but I have like a million parenting books. And I read a lot of those even before I was a sleep consultant. And for me, it sparked interest. And I felt very empowered by the knowledge I was learning. And I was capable of reading multiple books and looking for patterns and seeing, oh, there's like an agreement here on this, so this must be right. And this sounds a bit cock-a-doodle to me. So I think that's probably a bit crazy. And I don't align with that philosophy. I'm going to park that and I'm not going to follow that. But a lot of people will read a few books and it just provokes anxiety and stress for them because they feel like they're doing everything wrong. So if that's you, stop reading the books. But if you do enjoy reading them and you get empowerment from the knowledge, then that's fine. Yeah, I think just be aware of whether it works for you or not.
Best advice ever. Amen. Like, seriously, I think it just depends on you. Like, I had high anxiety with my first. And so I'm like, I had to put the books away. But now as I've gained more confidence in myself and my decision making as a mom, I'm okay if I read different books about different things. And like you said, you read it and you go with your gut and you're like, not sure I agree with that. I'm going to move on kind of thing. So I think that's such great advice. So tips on, you know, moms going back to work and they don't know how to get their babies to sleep and all that. Like, that kind of goes into the quote unquote crying out, the sleep training. You said there's lots of different ways. There's not just the crying out. What are some other ways that moms can sleep train? And yeah, there's just so much judgment on the crying out, not crying out, the co-sleeping, all that. Like, what's your thoughts? What's some other ways that we can get our babies down to sleep so we can get a better night's sleep when we go back to work?
So I think firstly, a lot of the judgment just comes from misunderstanding and often a little bit of jealousy. You know, I think that a lot of parents who are very sleep deprived and stuck in this rut that they feel like they can't move on from because they've subscribed to a extreme parenting philosophy. You know, they're unhappy. They're sleep deprived. They're unhappy. They're trying to subscribe to these extreme philosophies, which aren't gelling with them as a person. And so they then judge people who are taking their situation and improving it with sleep training. You know, they look at that and they're like, ugh, I judge that because I'm so unhappy in my own situation. And I think once we understand that the judgment probably comes from very unhappy people, then we can feel, you know, empathy for them and kind of brush off the judgment ourselves, knowing, yeah, it says more about you than me. So I'm good with my decision. So that's kind of, on the judgment people have. And the other place it comes from, obviously, is misunderstanding. They simply assume when they hear sleep training that you've put your two-week-old baby down to bed starving in a dirty diaper and you've left them to cry for 12 hours in a cold cot, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the image that the internet provokes and provides for people. And it's totally wrong. If you were to do cry it out with a 4 to 6 month old baby, you would still be doing night feeds. So you wouldn't even leave them to cry for 12 hours. You would put them down at bedtime and let them self-settle. On average, it takes 40 minutes on the first night and then it gets quicker and quicker from there. And then depending on how big they are, you would still be doing a feed around 11 or midnight and maybe an early morning one. And if they woke in between those times, you would be letting them self-settle, aka letting them cry until they go back to sleep. And the reality of that in the middle of the night, again, first night, about 40 minutes to go back to sleep, and then it gets quicker from there. So there's no 12 hours of baby crying, starving in their cot. It's completely wrong. And if you didn't want to do a strategy like that, you can obviously do something a little bit more middle of the road, which in America, you guys probably call it fervor. Or fervorizing your baby. It's controlled crying. It's called graduated extinction. We call it space soothing, where you can go for a short period of time, maybe like 5 minutes out of the room, and then you come back in for a couple of minutes and soothe your baby, and then you leave again. And you do that until they fall asleep. So it's more hands-on than cry it out. but you also can just leave the room, because a lot of parents really struggle to be in the room while their baby's crying. You know, it's very stressful on them. And as mums, we just want to kind of do everything to stop the crying, which mm-hmm. obviously would be counterintuitive for them learning to go to sleep.
Right.
And then if you wanted to stay in the room with them while they are learning to self-settle, then you can do something much more gentle where you stay with them and you can sit by the cot and you can use your voice and you can use touch. I try to avoid picking them up if you can. You can, you know, intermittently pat their back or rub their back. You can talk to them. You can shush them. You can do all the stuff, you know, using your sort of presence and proximity and your voice to reassure them. And I think the key there is to know that you are there to provide emotional and physical support whilst they learn to self-settle. You are not there to physically put them to sleep. Because if you stay and you physically put them to sleep with patting or a pacifier or rubbing their back until they fall asleep, then, I mean, it's an intermediate step. They're falling asleep in their cot, but they're not self-settling. So you're really just there to provide support, not physically make them go to sleep. And that's something more gentle than you being obviously outside of the room the whole time they're going through that process. But that does require parents to have the insight and the ability to gradually reduce how much they're interacting with the baby whilst they learn to self-settle. Otherwise, you'll always be in there with them falling asleep. But if you can gradually reduce how much you engage, then after a while, you'll be able to just pop them down and leave the room, and they'll just self-settle.
Yeah. Mama, let's just talk for a second. Some days we feel like we are rocking in motherhood, and other days we feel like we just can't catch a break from one fail after another. But just imagine, you can be patient, present, and enjoying motherhood again. You could feel the joy in knowing today is a new day, and whatever mistake I made yesterday, those were lessons, and I will be able to put them in practice today. You will feel appreciated, heard, and not so alone, and feeling like you were the bad mom. I know these feelings feel impossible to feel some days, but mama, you can get there. You can stay there more often than not. There are so many other mamas out there going through the same thing you are, or have been through what you're going through and can relate to your situation. That is why I created a mama community membership for mamas that need and want more support, more encouragement, more in-depth conversations, more clarity, and more confidence as a mama. Inside the Mama You're Doing Great community membership, you'll be more relatable, real, and safe conversations with other mamas, a place to bring your worries and your questions, to talk about all the good, bad, and beautiful things that motherhood brings. You will get a weekly encouragement text from me, as well as lives with podcast guests answering questions you have that you didn't get from the episode. Moms, you need a safe, fun, and judgment-free zone to be yourself and to be reminded how great you are daily. What do you say, mama? You ready to gain more confidence as a mom and not feel so alone in motherhood? Head on over to mamayouredoinggreat.com/membership and you'll get connected with other mamas just like you.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on driving around? You know, a lot of people put their babies in the car. That's kind of the same thing, right? It's like,
yeah, and I don't know about in the US, but petrol in New Zealand right now is so expensive. You know, you could save all that gas money and just hire a night nanny. and combined with the fact that it's really unsafe for your baby to sleep in a car seat, their heads can flop forward and they're at risk of positional asphyxiation where they actually can't breathe from being in that position. So it's really not ideal to use it as a sleep crutch for getting your baby to sleep. I would say if you're really stuck, you know, and it's one of those nights where your baby just won't sleep, I would put them in a flat pram instead and I would walk around the house with them. I would push the pram over like an electrical cord so it goes bump, 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 that kind of thing. And I would just try to feed them to sleep in my arms, you know, all of that kind of stuff inside the house rather than going for a drive.
Okay. So another question is back sleeping or stomach sleeping? That's a big topic. You know, it's changed every, 10 years. What do you think? And like, what age do you recommend stomach sleeping, or do you from day one?
So it's been a lot more than 10 years since that recommendation changed. Professor Edward Mitchell was actually a professor here at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. And he actually is the pediatric doctor and scientist who pioneered the back to sleep campaign in the 80s.
Okay.
So he is the one that discovered babies were dying sleeping on their stomachs. And yeah, he's amazing. He's about to be knighted in New Zealand for his work towards safe sleep around the world. And yeah, it's a great story, him discovering that information. And because it was the 80s, we have a service in New Zealand called Plunket, which you see for your baby for the first 3 years of their life. They're like a nurse who you see every kind of month to check on your baby and deliver you information about what your baby's going through and check that they are well, instead of seeing a pediatrician like you do in the States. And Professor Edward Mitchell, when he discovered that babies should be sleeping on their backs, he drove from the top of the North Island in New Zealand to the bottom of the South Island, and he stopped in to see pretty much every single Plunket clinic to tell them this information personally, to deliver that information to all the mums. And he basically is responsible for getting that information out there in the 80s when there was no internet and saving hundreds of babies. And then obviously that information also spread around the world, which is really cool. So we have known since the mid 80s that babies shouldn't sleep on their tummies as newborns. And now the recommendation is obviously put your baby to sleep on their back. But once they can roll themselves, they can sleep in any position they choose, as long as their cot or their crib is really safe. So no cot bumpers or toys or blankets or sheets. Just use a sleeping bag, and it's a nice firm flat surface. And they can roll and sleep in whatever position they choose once they can roll over. But we just never put them down ourselves on their tummies to go to sleep.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that information. So what's the best age recommendation of putting them in their own room versus sleeping in your room? Like you had said earlier, you know, there's a window and then they kind of know and then they fight you more. What's like the best window for that?
So that's really hard. The American Academy of Pediatrics, I think maybe 1 to 2 years ago now, they changed their recommendation from room sharing for 6 months to 12 months. And that got a lot of kickback from a lot of parents and a lot of pediatricians saying that's really unrealistic and we don't see the evidence to support that. You know, the gains in terms of how many babies would be saved from that extended 6 months just wasn't there. So that was tricky. And then just recently, I think in the last, I'm going to say 3 months, the AAP has actually reneged on that and they've gone back to saying, please room share for 6 months. So their safe sleep recommendation is to room share for 6 months. That's kind of what we have to stick to because of the safe sleep recommendation. If you are finding that your little one is disturbed by you in the same room, I'd probably just use some white noise at night, you know, like some rain sounds or something like that, so that you both are not disturbing each other. And if you do decide to not room share after 6 months, then it has to really be it has to really be a personal, you know, decision, and you have to kind of weigh up your baby's individual risk of SIDS or SUDI. And the biggest risk factors there are things like whether you smoked in pregnancy or you smoke now around your baby. That's the biggest one. And then whether they were premature, stuff like that. And if you don't really tick any of those risk factors, then you might make the decision to not room share for the full 6 months. But it does have to be a personal one. But I do find, like a lot of people said, when the AAP extended it to 12 months, that room sharing from 6 to 12 months, that's really hard. I would personally move them at 6 months because they do become very mobile and very aware that you're in the room and they can see you. You know, they wake up in the night and they sit up and they can literally see you in the room. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard for them to then just go back to sleep when mum's right there. You know, they're like, hey, mum. Exactly. And it's very hard for you to, yeah, ignore those little sounds that we all make in the night. You're the mum, you wake up, you hear them roll over and it disturbs your sleep. So I think I agree. It was very unrealistic to extend the room sharing from 6 months to 12 months.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So toddlers, let's talk a little bit about toddlers. When is it okay not to nap? Like, okay, I know, you know, there could be, you know, first graders that nap too. I mean, that's awesome. I hope mine does, but they don't. They, you know, around 2.5, 3, they kind of start to fight you on that. Like, do you recommend continuing to try? What age is best?
Is first grade when they go to school? So 5 for you guys?
Kindergarten is 5.
Oh, so how old is first grade?
6, 7.
Wow. Okay. So firstly, if your first grader is still napping, I would probably see an ENT, so an ear, nose and throat specialist, because it's probably a sign that they're not sleeping too well at night, and that could be due to sleep apnea. So having enlarged adenoids or tonsils and mouth breathing or snoring at night, and needing to sleep more in the day because their sleep at night is no good. So it's a bit of a red flag if your child keeps napping after 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
I think most children drop their naps between 2 and 3 years, and that's pretty normal. They are maturing in their sleep, and the focus is for them to get most of their sleep at night. So we don't want to sacrifice night sleep in order to keep a nap. The sort of flip side of that is I know a lot of people have a work schedule that means their toddler can't get 11 to 12 hours sleep at night. So if that's the case, then you probably will keep a nap longer than someone who can allow their toddler to have 11 or 12 hours sleep at night. So if your work schedule means your toddler can only get 9 or 10 hours at night, then they will need a nap during the day. So we're looking to have that sort of 11 to 12 hours overall by sort of 3 years old. And if they can achieve all of that at night, they won't need a nap.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't even think about that with the work, because waking up, you know, I got to take my oldest one to school. So I got to wake up my 3-year-old. So she's definitely in between right now. She's like, she could go without one, but she's kind of grouchy in the afternoon. So I'm like, you really need like at least an hour or two in the day. So, okay, that's awesome. That's really good to think about. So what is some tips transitioning from the crib to the bed? I saw your Sunday sleep session time on Instagram, and you had talked about, you know, instead of telling your child, like, be quiet, stay in your bed, go to sleep, like creating that like kind of anxiety for them. Like, I don't know how to go to sleep, you know, saying, lay down, close your eyes, be quiet.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that, because I thought that was awesome. But so let's talk about a little bit about that. I think, you know, a lot of parents, you know, they're trying to switch from crib to big bed, and they say that, stay in your bed, because you just want them to stay in your bed, and they are trying to figure out how to go to sleep.
Yeah. So I think stay in your bed is okay. That's a positive statement. The difficulty is if you say don't get out of bed, because that's a negative statement, and the toddlers just, they only hear the get out of bed. So essentially you're telling them to get out of bed over and over. So stick with the positive statement, stay in bed, lie down, close your eyes, be quiet. And yes, I do avoid saying go to sleep, because that's a complex neurological process, and that can be very anxiety provoking for a lot of people. Whereas if you just tell them to close their eyes, chances are eventually they're going to fall asleep. The other thing with the transition from the crib to the big bed is a lot of people do it too early, simply because they've got another baby on the way and they want to free up the crib. And if you're doing this around 18 months to 2 years, chances are your toddler doesn't have the impulse control to stay in a big bed yet. And that's where you're going to have that yo-yo child who's just running out of their room constantly. They simply don't have the impulse control. And it's one of those milestones like learning to walk. We can't force a 6-month-old baby to learn to walk, and we can't force a 2-year-old to develop impulse control. So I would recommend trying to stick with the crib for more like 2.5-3 years if you possibly can, because that's when they will develop that impulse control and be able to control the impulse of wanting to jump out of bed and see what's happening in the house. You know, they can hear that people are awake and they just want to go and see what's happening. So wait for that impulse control. If you can't and you do have to move to a big bed earlier, that's where you might need like a baby gate on the door to provide that impulse control for them. So they simply know they can't leave their room, so they might as well just stay in bed. The other thing that I think a lot of parents fall into the trap of when they move from the crib to the big bed is suddenly there's room in the big bed for them. So they'll often lie down with their toddler whenever they hit a glitch with their sleeping. And this very quickly creates a new sleep association for your toddler, where they want you to lie down with them every night and twice a night in the middle of the night to go back to sleep. So highly recommend not doing that. If you ever have to stay with your toddler because they are scared of the dark, or they had a bad dream, or something's going on at bedtime, I 100% prefer sitting either on the floor next to their bed or bring a chair in and sit next to their bed. Don't lie down on the bed with them. It's just easier to prevent that problem than fix it later on. And my other tip is probably around creating some really positive interactions through role play around moving to the big bed. So you can role play with them before it's bedtime, so in the day or the early evening, actually going to bed and staying in the big bed and closing their eyes, and praise them for that activity during the role play. So then when it comes time to bedtime, they know what it is you're expecting of them. and they know that the praise is coming and that you're going to be very stoked that they stay in bed and close their eyes.
That's awesome. I love that. What I would have done to know all this, like 6 years, 3 years ago. So my 3.5-year-old, she's still in the crib because again, my first was just like a nightmare. She had not one time tried to climb over. Like, is that okay to keep them in until like maybe 4?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If they don't try to climb out, absolutely fine. Yeah. The only time we would move them quickly and early would be because they tried to climb out, because obviously that would be really dangerous.
Right. Okay. So you said like, you know, laying with them, that's, you're basically starting all over with the self-soothing and sleep training. What is like some recommendations? I know you kind of said, I mean, that I think that was great for role-playing during the day and just praising and stuff. And then even the baby gate at the door, are those just things that kind of help? Because in the middle of the night, I know when the toddlers come to the room, sometimes moms are just so tired, they just pop them right in the bed with them.
Yeah.
Especially if there's a sibling down the hallway and then you don't want to do like, you know, they kind of cry it out and they're screaming at 3 or 4, you know, and then you're waking up the whole house.
Yeah. And the second child, we call that second child syndrome in the industry because it absolutely influences how you parent. And you really have to think, you know, is this just short term or is this long term? And you're probably short term preventing your second child from waking up, but long term creating a problem for yourself that 2 weeks from now, you're really going to regret. So it's all about doing the right thing in the short term and the right thing for your family. If you're okay with occasionally bed sharing or even permanently bed sharing with your toddler, go for it. But if that drives you insane and you can't sleep at night, then just don't even put them in your bed. And I talked to a mum recently and I gave her a strategy that I had used and she didn't realize she could be that lenient, you know? And I was like, of course you can. Like, they're children. Of course these things are going to pop up, but it's about what's going to work for your family. And the strategy I gave her was so simple. I said, you know, her 3.5-4-year-old kept coming in her room at night and she couldn't sleep if he was in the bed with her. And she just didn't have the energy or the capacity to sleep train him to stay in his bed. And I said, why don't you just put a spare mattress on the floor next to your bed and a blanket and a pillow and just tell him when he comes in, that's where he can sleep. Like, he can just sleep next to you. It's fine. He'll go back to sleep. You go back to sleep. No one's up in the night screaming their heads off. Everyone's getting the sleep they need. And in all likelihood, he's going to get bored of this in a few weeks and stay in his own bed. And she was just blown away by the simplicity of that, you know? And I was like, of course, we have to have a strategy that's going to work for the situation and time. And that works really well for toddlers. Like, it's really boring. There's no engagement. So there's no real motivation to keep waking up in the night, you know? But if they're afraid of the dark and they need to be near you or they had a bad dream, well, their needs are being met. They're right next to you. They're just not in your bed. So you can probably sleep a lot better.
I love it. Like you said, it's like, I know, like, we're just so stressed out and we're like seeking for like this magic answer, right? And then it's like, it really can be that simple or that, you know, just like what's going to work right then, or like, let's kind of tweak it a little bit. I don't know. It's just everything you've shared just has like made me grin and like chuckle also, because I'm just like, oh my gosh, what I would have done to know all this. And I just know that you're going to help so many moms, and you do. So share with my mamas where they can find you, where they can find your expertise, your advice, your classes, all the things.
Yeah. So obviously come see us on Instagram. My handle is just Baby Sleep Consultant. You can find us online. We're babysleepconsultant.co. And we're on Facebook as well, but I don't think anyone else is anymore. And we do international phone consultations. We have our online programs that work internationally as well. And the good thing, I guess, for all the US listeners is we charge in New Zealand dollars. So one New Zealand dollar is about 50 cents in the US. So very cheap for you to use our services across the world.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for all the advice. And I know this is going to help so many moms.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you can resonate with what you heard. If you want to get more connected with other mamas like you and feel encouraged and not so alone, head on over to mamayouredoinggreat.com/membership. Also, make sure to share this episode with a friend that can use some words of encouragement. It would mean so much to me if you would take a second and leave a rating or a review.
There will be days you think you are failing, but until next time, remember, Mama, you're doing great.